This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, David keeps his place in the first 11. And we answer your questions for this week. David, back in the first 11, they must have liked you the last game, so they're trying to keep you for good.
Well, maybe I'm the first team captain, first team wicketkeeper, still has a broken finger, so that's probably the main reason.
Yeah.
And we had quite a decent game against very strong opposition. They were second in the table, so we were looking to put in a good result against them, especially as this is the start of the second half of the season now. We're on the sort of the home straight, if you like. And we lost the toss and they put us in because they're very good at chasing. They win all their games chasing. And we did pretty well. We started quite slowly. It was a difficult wicket. A new ball and a couple of half-decent opening bowlers meant they restricted us to quite a low score to start with. But our middle order made a big difference again. And despite the fact we lost a few wickets at the end when we're going for some quick runs to try and get over 200, we still managed to finish on 198 in our 50 overs, which we thought was going to be a good score, especially at the start of the first 10 or 15 overs. We were going so slowly, we were thinking 150 might be a good score. So, yeah. But the bowling got easier and the batting got better and we managed 198, which is a tiny little bit of a disappointment that we didn't get over the 200 mark because you get an extra batting point for that. But the main thing is we put on a score that we felt we could defend. But it all hinged around their sort of two main batsmen, their two star batsmen who give the ball plenty of whack if they're given half a chance.
Yep.
When they started pretty well. They were going along quite quickly in the early overs, but we managed to get key wickets at key times, which just pegged them back enough, including their two star batsmen. We managed to get them both out for quite low scores. And so, in the end, they didn't really go for it. They managed to get within 40 runs of our score, but no closer than that. So, that means, if you remember from last time, there's a 10-point split if you draw, which means that instead of it being 10 points to us and no points to them, they just managed to, off the last ball of the game, get the two runs they required to get within 40 of us to make it an 8-2 split instead of a 10-0 split. So they got themselves two extra points there. But in the long run, we were the far better team, and we got the much better of the draw there. Main point of interest for me again was the very defensive mindset of both captains. I think that's a really big difference between first team and second team cricket, as far as I can see. It's a legitimate tactic, of course, to set defensive fields and aim to build pressure by bowling dot balls. There's nothing wrong with that tactic. It's completely legitimate, especially in one-day cricket, where you have to go for the runs always, because if you don't, you lose. But I find it quite a dull way to play if the draw is possible, and this is exactly why this type of game is exactly why. It's just they don't, when the team doesn't go for it and you don't particularly attack them, then it's stalemate. So I would have attacked a lot more. I'll give you a specific example. We have a spinner who is pretty accurate, but he doesn't turn the ball a great deal. But when he gets it right, he does get it to drift in the air. And he does get it to turn a little bit, and he gets it to bounce. So he can be quite a handful on a difficult wicket against the nervous batsman. And that's exactly what we had in the situation in the middle overs. They lost a couple of wickets, and they were sort of flirting with, can we still get the runs, or shall we shut up shop? And I don't think they'd quite decided themselves. They were just sort of seeing how it went. You know, it was that critical stage where they were seeing how it was going, and they hadn't really decided, they were plodding along. And so the batsmen were looking a little bit nervous against him. And we only had one close catcher. We had a close catcher at sort of short mid on. But he was bowling lots of dot balls, getting lots of maidens and causing the batsmen real problems. He wasn't getting maidens because they were driving him to mid-off all the time. He was getting maidens because he was beating the bat with his arm ball. They were poking at it nervously. And once or twice, the ball went up in the air. Bat pad type thing. But because we didn't have a short leg, because we didn't have a slip, those chances went begging. They just went down as dot balls. He was happy with that. The captain was happy with that. Great, we've got another dot. We've built up some pressure here. And then, but I felt it was a chance to win the game missed, because I would have had a slip. At the very least, I would have had a slip, because he's got an arm ball which you can't pick at all. And I think maybe if you asked him, he wouldn't say this, but maybe it's just the one that doesn't turn. It just naturally goes on with the arm. So it's not necessarily a specific arm ball. But he does have one which he pushes through a little bit quicker. And if that catches the edge, then it's 50-50 whether the keeper can get it. So, you know, why not have a slip in? Even if he's not turning the ball much, I definitely have a slip in. And if he was getting a turn and bounce, then which he was, then, you know, you have a short leg. He's an off spinner, so you have a short leg in. Mm. That would be my minimum. And maybe I'd have someone short on the, you know, extra cover or cover somewhere around there for the one that pops off the bat on the offside. So I think we missed a trick there. We took 8 wickets. We missed a couple of chances. I missed a stumping off him, unfortunately. It was a difficult one. But, you know, I would back myself to get it more times than not. I didn't think we backed ourselves to bowl them out. Especially when the two star batsmen went, you know, you can understand your reluctance when you've got a guy coming in who has scored lots of runs and, you know, he's one of the star players in the entire league and you're worried he can win the game. You know, if he gets going, he'll score 100 and he'll win the game.
Yeah.
But once he'd gone and also a couple of other better batsmen who are quite good as well had gone, then, you know, why not attack? Why not try and get that break through the wicket? Okay, if they hit a couple of boundaries, you know, go back to your original plan. But we had enough run. We did have enough runs to play with. So I felt that although it was a legitimate tactic and the way that tactic was executed was very good, I wouldn't have done it like that. What's your thinking on these things, Kev? Are you a build pressure and wait for the batsman to make a mistake type person, or are you more of a let's take a risk and put a couple of close catches in?
David, I think if you leave for the batsman to make a mistake, more often than not, they survive. If they survive that period, then there's sort of no hope going back and getting that wicket. So I think from the word go, it's important to try and get the wicket so they don't get settled in or anything like that. And I think our captain especially was especially good last season doing that. Every time a new batsman came out, or even if a batsman looked unsettled after a break, he'd immediately get aggressive. Look for the wicket, because he knows once he gets settled in, there's every chance that he could go on to make a big score, which could really hurt us. So in restricting the runs for the short-term goals, in the long term, that batsman could go on to make a big score. So it's best to get him out early, as our captain used to say. So, I completely agree with your point of view as well.
I'll tell you what summed it up for me. A new batsman was in. He was nervous because it was his first game for the club. We knew that, and we were trying to play on that. You know, we were having a bit of banter with him, and you know, trying to sort of up the nervousness. And he came in at 6, so you know they were 4 down. They were just at that again. It was just at that key point where, you know, another wicket could open the door for us, and we had a third man and a fine leg at the time.
Yeah.
Seamer bowling, third man and a fine leg, slip in a gully. And I said to the captain, new man, let's bring the third man up to second slip, just see what happens. Mm. And that's a fairly orthodox tactic, isn't it? Nobody would raise an eyebrow to that particularly, would they? And his response, well, of course, he's the captain, so, you know, that's fine. His response was, what we're doing now is working, so we don't need to change it. Let's leave the third man in.
Yeah.
And I see his point of view, of course I do, but you know, a new batsman who's a bit nervous, playing against a seamer who's bowling quite well, you know, you'd bring the slip up, wouldn't you? Okay, if he edges one through third slip and it goes down and he gets a boundary, then drop the man back down again. He's got a four. He's still not feeling that confident because he's nicked it through third slip, so he's not exactly smashed it through the covers.
Yeah.
Drop him back down and save the boundary then in case he does another one. But I would have definitely had that second slip, and I think that's sort of the main difference between the way, certainly the way that I would captain and the way that the first team captain is. Whether that's throughout the league, I don't know. I mean, I've seen a couple of first team games now, and you know, it seems like sides are content just to restrict the scores when they bat first or when they bowl first. So, you know, they had a third man and a fine leg right from the start when we were batting, for example. So that what that field says to me, when you drop a third man and a fine, when you stick the opposition in, drop a third man and a fine leg down, what you're saying to me there is you've got no intention of trying to bowl the opposition out. All you want to do is keep the score under 200 and hope that you can knock them off. And that's quite, I feel that's quite a negative way to play cricket.
David, tell us about these pro bowling events that are happening at the NatWest ODIs. You're in the area. What's been happening over there?
Oh, yeah. Well, as you know, NatWest, the bank, sponsor the One Day Internationals over here in the UK every summer.
Yeah.
And part of that sponsorship is they have a sort of an area at every game of the One Day Internationals, which is for people to have a little go on things. They've got a catching game, which is quite good. You stand on a specially designed turret with kind of an inflatable thing all around you, and a tennis ball gets fired at you, and you have to dive and catch it, and somebody takes a picture of you, and then you've got a picture of you taking a diving catch against the crowd. So that's a bit of fun. And the other thing that's there is a game where you can find out how fast and how accurate your bowling is.
Nice.
And again, it's a big inflatable net type thing that you just you run up and you bowl, and then there's a big screen there, a big flat TV screen there, and it gives you a score, and its score is based on pace and line and length.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a long time listener to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, you know that Pitch Vision would be the ideal product for that particular game, because Pitch Vision, of course, could give you instant feedback on your line, your length, and your bowling speed. So that's what NatWest have done this year. They've brought us in. We've specially created a version of Pitch Vision which is designed for the game. And if you don't know what Pitch Vision is, I'll just remind anyone who's not sure what it is. It's a mat which goes down on the floor, and when the bowler bowls the ball, it hits the mat and then it hits the back wall, and then from that it calculates exactly how fast and accurate you were. So that's all powered by Pitch Vision, and NatWest are very happy with the results so far. And the other thing that you can do is when you've had your little go and it gives you your score and you think, well, that's great, you also get a unique code. And if you go over to the NatWest website, which is natwest.com/cricket, if you're interested, and you put your special code in, and it takes the data that you have bowled on the day, because you get to bowl three balls, and it plays you a video of Michael Vaughan playing a shot to each of those three balls. So if you bowl a half volley and off stump, he smashes it. If you bowl a good length ball, he defends it. If you bowl a long hop, he'll pull it in the Michael Vaughan way.
Yeah.
So it's basically you're bowling to Michael Vaughan, and he's playing the relevant shot to the ball that you bowled. So you can see whether you are any good or not.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good game. It's good fun, even if you don't go to the website. And if you do go to the website, then you can get to see how Michael Vaughan plays it. And we had a lot of fun making those videos, because as you can imagine, we had to just film Michael playing pretty much every single shot to every single ball. So,
yeah.
And then he gives his response to it as well. He says, oh, you know, that was a wide half volley. You know, any good batsman would dispatch that to the boundary pretty quickly. Or, you know, that was a good back of a length ball. I had to go back and play that off the back foot. So well bowled. You know, he'll give a little comment at the end of every one. So that took an entire day of him batting. And the results can be seen on the website. So if you're in the UK or you're coming to the UK for any of the one-day internationals over the rest of the 2010 summer, then come and have a little go. See if you can bowl to Michael Vaughan or whether he just smashes you all over the place.
Well, there we have a couple of questions to get into, so we should get straight into it.
Sure.
Welcome to the question section for this week. David, our first question is from an unknown person, and they ask, do you know what cricket boot I should get with toe protection, or do you know a great drill to work on to block a Yorker? Do you recommend that he gets the boot, like a boot with toe protection? David said when he's practicing to block the Yorker, he has that safety in his mind that he can practice as much as he wants without getting hurt.
Well, I don't know about you, Kev, but I don't know anyone who makes boots with toe protection anymore. Do they exist in Australia? I certainly haven't been able to track any down from any of the big manufacturers over here.
Well, when I was going to buy boots a couple of years back, David, they were still in production. I'm not sure if they still are anymore because I don't think a lot of them are very popular because cricketers nowadays use the same bowling boots, the same boots for bowling and batting. And yeah. Boots with toe protection can be sort of detrimental for fast bowlers because their toe goes right up to the top of the boot and that could hurt for their toes. So I don't think many bowlers got it. And when I considered getting that, I considered that fact as well. So maybe that's why they're not in production. But a couple of years back, they were.
Yeah, well, I certainly can't find any anymore. Now, whether they've completely gone or whether they're just hard to find, it's difficult to say. Boots generally are going the way of more like trainers, aren't they? So,
yeah.
I suppose the idea is that it's certainly for batting. You want a nice light boot. You don't want a great big heavy thing because you want to be able to run quickly between the wickets. And the problem with toe protection is if it has to be a decent toe protection, you have to have a steel toe cap. And a steel toe cap is not exactly conducive to running a quick single.
Yeah.
It'd be like running in diving boots, wouldn't it? So yeah. So I think the payoff is, you know, the balance is, you know, do you want a more comfortable shoe that you can run more quickly in, or do you want a heavy lumbering thing that's going to protect your toe? And the balance is, how likely is it that you're going to get hit on the toe?
Yeah.
You can buy trainers with steel toe caps in, but they're trainers rather than cricket boots.
Yeah.
So if you think it's genuinely a problem and you're worried about it so much so that it's affecting your batting, then maybe what you can do, I probably wouldn't recommend this, but it's probably the only way I can think of anyway, is to buy these trainers with the steel toe caps in and then use them in practice. And then either use a bowling machine or throwdowns to get someone to practice against Yorkers. And it's pretty easy to practice against Yorkers. You just set the bowling machine or get someone with a decent throw to get the ball to pitch on the crease, you know, where a Yorker pitches. And then your job is just to get the bat down on the ball as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
There's nothing clever or complicated about keeping a Yorker out. You've just got to jam the bat down quickly. What you might want to look at from a technical point of view is the way that you set up. So you've got to make sure that you are in a nice balanced position at the crease. And then when you're moving your feet, you're not getting yourself closed off. So, you know, your front foot doesn't go across your back foot, you know, in some kind of trigger move or something like that, because if you end up closed off, then you're not going to be able to get your feet out of the way. So yeah. You need to be light on your feet and you need to be in a balanced position on the balls of your feet with the weight distributed evenly between the front and back foot, and then with your head over your front foot and your eyes level and you're keeping your head still. because if you're not doing any of those basic things well, and it is amazing how many people don't do those basic things well, then you're increasing your chances of getting hit on the front foot because you're in the wrong place and you can't get your foot out of the way because all your weight's on your front foot, for example, then you're locked in then. And if the ball hits you on the big toe, then you've got nowhere to go. So that's one little thing to look at. But really the key is just to practice against it and hope that you don't get too many bowlers who can bowl decent Yorkers. You don't get that many who can bowl decent Yorkers anyway. I mean, even at the top level, how many bowlers can you turn around and say they bowl absolutely magnificent Yorkers at will?
Yeah.
There's not that many, are there? So, in all the years I've been playing cricket, I've only ever seen one person go off after being hit by a Yorker. So, you know, what does that say? That it doesn't happen very often. So, you know, don't worry too much about it. But if it's a genuine worry for you, then practice.
All right, David, Adil's got a question for us, and he asks, in the past, I had problems tackling spinners or slow bowlers because I could not play the sweep, nor my driving was not that good. I've corrected this problem, but I would still like to improve my batting against spinners. I still find it difficult to move down the track and play the spinners. I'm afraid that I'll be stumped because of the risk I'm taking. Is there any specific drill I can apply to make my judgment of when to come down the track better? David, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think this is a case of technique building confidence. So if he knows he's got the right technique to be able to do it, then he'll feel more confident to be able to do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? Well, there's a few things you can do. And again, you know, what it boils down to, as so many of these things do, is practice. The first thing you do is when you get out into the middle, you have a little look at the bowling and see if it's the type of bowling where you can move your feet. If the bowling is a little bit flatter, then maybe you don't want to move your feet. And if it's a little bit loopier, then maybe you do want to move your feet, unless he's getting a lot of dip, because you've got to be careful of the judgment. So generally it's a full and straight ball that you want to be moving down the pitch to, because if it's fairly full, then you can get to it either on the half volley or on the full toss and hit it.
Yeah.
And if it's straight, you're more likely to be able to get a something on it, you know, a bat or a pad or something like that, and play an effective shot. The way you practice it is to get into the nets, again with throwdowns or a machine. If you've got access to a bowling machine, you can set it up to be bowling spin. Move with your head, if that makes sense. The head drives everything else. You don't really lead with your feet or your shoulder. It's your head which is going forward in a straight line towards the ball.
Yeah.
Sounds simple again, but watch the ball all the way through. Wait for it to arrive, and then play the shot with good technique and a straight bat with the spin. I'll just break that down a little bit more. Good technique means you don't put your head up in the air and give it a big yahoo, because as soon as you lose your shape, you're in trouble. A straight bat, because you want to be playing with the full face of the bat as often as possible anyway, especially if you're taking a risk when you're coming down the wicket, as he mentioned, that you're adding the risk of getting stumped into the other ways that you could get out there. So keep your elbow high and hit the ball back either through mid-on or mid-off or maybe mid-wicket. Or if you're going with the spin, then, and it's the ball's turning away from you, then perhaps as wide as extra cover is okay. What you don't want to be doing is, say, trying to drive the off-spinner who's turning the ball into you if you're right-handed through extra cover. And the reason for that is that you're taking a risk on, if you don't quite get to the ball on the half volley, then it turns, it could go between the bat and the pad, and then you could be either stumped or bowled. So you want to be playing with the spin. So if the ball's turning in, you want to be trying to hit the ball through the onside, and if the ball's turning away, you want to be trying to hit the ball through the offside.
Yeah.
If it feels wrong, if you don't quite get there, it's not you haven't moved into the right position, the bowler's thrown it a lot wider, he's seen you coming and he's thrown it out a lot wider because he knows that if he can just beat the bat, he's got the wicket, then just try and get something in the way. You know, get a bat on it, stick your front pad out, just do anything to get in the way. You're not going to get out LBW if you're halfway down the track. So just get something in the way. Don't be afraid to pull out. Just because you move down the wicket doesn't mean you necessarily have to hit it for a boundary or even a single. Just get something in the way of it if you're not 100% sure. And then go and practice it in the nets as much as you can. Get the ball turning away and learn how to hit it through mid-off and mid-on. Get the ball turning in and learn how to hit it through mid-on and mid-wicket. And the more you practice, the more confident you'll get at doing it until it just becomes second nature. And then you'll wonder why you were so nervous in the first place. Because the really good players for spin, they never look like they're going to get out-stumped. And the reason they never look like they're going to get stumped is because they're confident that they feel they are going to be able to get to the ball. They feel they're going to be able to play the ball even if it turns, because they know that they're playing with a straight bat. They know that they are able to pull out if it's not right. And they know that they are technically good enough to hit the ball along the ground into a gap when that chance comes. So in terms of specific drills, well, I mean, there isn't really. I mean, only just to say, set up the bowling machine for spin and then just practice it as much as you can. Or get in the nets against a decent spinner and practice it as much as you can. There's nothing wrong with, if you're in the nets and you've got a spin net, you've got a few different types of spinners there bowling against you, then say to yourself, right, you know, the next 10 balls, I'm going to come down the wicket to every ball and I'm going to see how I do against it, because in the nets it doesn't matter if you get out. And if you're doing okay, that's going to give you that little bit of boost of confidence to be able to do it in the middle.
Yeah. David, our next question is from RB, and he has a bit of a dilemma. He says, I've always been a number three batsman, but I'm currently playing for a club where one of our openers always seems to get out early. That is within the first 5-10 overs of a 45-over match. It ends up with me being more or less an opener. Would I be better off suggesting to the skipper that I open, or am I better placed at three? I'm able to build an innings and see off opening bowlers when needed to, but this can sometimes cause me to get bogged down in terms of scoring quickly, especially when we're chasing a big total. David, RB has already highlighted one of his weaknesses, which is getting bogged down. And I don't know, as an opener, sometimes you can afford that, but as he said, when chasing a big total, sometimes you can't afford that. So do you think he should stay at number three?
It's a tricky one. We don't know the whole story here, so it'd be interesting to know the whole story. But from what he said there, I've got two questions. My first question would be, where do you think you're most needed? Because if you look at sort of the stats of cricket generally, you know, and we're talking mainly sort of first class and test cricket in this case, but it's bound to apply across the board. If you look at the statistics, you can afford to lose a wicket early on as long as the next two make up the difference. The next two stands make up the difference. So, and that's just through sort of statistical analysis. You're more likely to win if your second and third wicket stands are good than you are if any other stands are good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you can talk statistics forever, but what that says to me is that you need your best two batsmen at number three and number four. Because your number three then is capable of playing as an opener if needed, or playing as a middle order batsman if needed. And the same as your number four. Your number four needs to be able to come in if the score's, you know, 10 for two or 200 for two. You know, so that's where your best two batsmen need to be. If that's the case, are you one of the best two batsmen in the team? If you are one of the best two batsmen in the team, then stay at number three, because you're more needed at number three than you are as an opener. The second question I would ask there is, what do you prefer to do? Because if you feel like the number three is the stroke maker, the best batsman in the side, and you feel like that's a lot of pressure because, you know, Don Bradman was number three, Viv Richards was number three. This is the absolute core position, and I don't fancy the pressure of that. Then, go up to opening if you feel better opening, and sometimes also in terms of nerves. You know, you have to have quite a strong stomach to be able to bat at number three, because openers, you know when you're going to bat. As soon as the other innings finishes, or as soon as the game starts, you're walking out to bat. So there's no nerves there. There's far less nerves. You just walk out and you're away. You don't get that nervous waiting period. But number three has to sit there with his or her pads on for as long as it takes for the first wicket to fall. So if you're gradually getting more and more nervous as time goes on and that's affecting your game, then yeah, maybe you need to go up and open because you feel more comfortable opening. If that is the case, if either of those two things are the case, and there's nothing wrong with either of those two things, it's not a weakness, then have a word with the coach and say, look, I much fancy opening because I know I can do the job because I've been in that situation already this season, as you know, Joe the opener's been getting out early. I think I can go out there and open because I can do a decent job as an opener and we can get a good opening stand. The way I wouldn't frame it is to say, I noticed that Joe hasn't been getting any runs this season. Why don't you drop him and put me in as an opener? Probably not the most political way to go about it. I'd frame it more as I think I can do a better job as an opener than I can at number three.
Yeah.
So didn't really answer that one directly because we don't know the whole story. But based on those two questions, you can decide what's best for you.
Yeah. David, our last question is one for the fast bowlers. And Jay asks, I once heard that stocky fast bowlers need to be side on to access power. Also, front on bowlers tend to be tall and rangy. From that, I feel being 6 foot and stocky, I should change to a side on action. I was wondering what your thoughts are. Is it more complicated than height and mass? And is it an individual thing? But David, it does tend to be that tall bowlers are usually front-on bowlers and the shorter bowlers are side-on bowlers. But does it really matter and is it really an individual thing?
Well, I'd be interested to hear what you think about this, Kev. You're a bowler, aren't you? So what's your thoughts on this? If you were coaching a bowler at all, a decent height bowler who's quite stocky and he's saying, I'm thinking about changing my action to side-on, what would you say?
I'll have a look at his action at the moment, David. If it's working for him now, and if there's just a little few tweaks that need to be changed, then I wouldn't suggest changing his action. And it also depends on how old he is, because I do know that if he's sort of older than 16 or pretty old to change his action, then things could go wrong. Because if he's a front-on bowler now changing to side-on, then that brings in the possibility of a mixed action and everything else. So if it's working for him now, I'd make him stay on what he is now. But if he really wants to change to a side on and the front on action isn't working for him, and as you said, he's stocky, I'm not sure if I'd stop him, David.
I think you're about right, Kev. Yeah, it's the bowling action is a very complicated movement, so you don't want to go into making any changes in a light-hearted way. You know, you don't want to just go, oh well, I think I'll be side on this week.
Yeah,
because it's very hard to especially the older you get, it's, as you said, it's very hard to change something which you're used to.
Yeah,
it's a complicated movement. If you've been doing it in that way for years, then it's difficult.
Yeah.
However, it's not impossible. So the question then becomes, is it better to bowl from a side on action or a front on action if you're a stocky bowler? Technically, it is better. Because if you're side on, you can generate more power by being able to drive your hip through a much wider range, like a javelin throw. You know that's that stretch reflex where you have that big stretch and then bam, you power your hip through. That is that comes from being in a side on position. So technically speaking, you can generate more power from a side on position. So that's when you see the whole thing about the having the front leg locked as well, because the power, you know, you have to have something for the hip to drive against. Side on bowlers do that really well. Front on bowlers don't do that very well. But what you find with a front on bowler is that they do other things to compensate for that. So they are more quickly getting off their back foot and into the front foot. So kind of speed comes from, it still comes from the hip drive, but it comes from getting from the front foot to the back foot much more quickly than the hip powering through against that braced front leg. So in other words, you can do either. That's a long way of saying you can do either. And the real trick is look at where your back foot is landing now, and then perfect what you have based on that. Because as we've said, as we've discussed before, that is locked in, that back foot. That is the hardest thing to change. Yeah. But the real core of it is, if you can stretch and you contract your muscles in the correct sequence, as Ian Pont says, then you're going to maximize how efficiently you can bowl and how much power you can put into the ball. So don't worry too much about changing to a side-on action because you've heard it's better. Yes, technically it is better, but it's a very hard and long road to try and change your action. So it's going to be much easier to make slight adjustments to what you've already got than to start again from scratch.
Yeah. Well, David, a few good questions there. Who's going to take out the grand prize for the Pitch Vision competition this week, which is a free course from Pitch Vision Academy?
I liked RB's question. I think, you know, people maybe think that, oh, well, you know, opening a number three is almost interchangeable, but I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. It's not a huge difference, but I think the big difference is that you have to, as a number three, you have to wait. As an opener, you don't have to wait. So it got me thinking about that. So that was interesting. So let's give it to RB.
Yeah, I like the question too. And RB is walking away with a course of his choice from Pitch Vision Academy. And I'm sure he's going to pick the batting course, if I'm not mistaken.
Hopefully.
So all you have to do... So if you want to enter, all you have to do is enter your question, email us your question into mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And in the subject title, please enter podcast competition, and you can walk away with a free Pitch Vision Academy course. And you can also get other information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. And you can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 16th of July. So if you want to get in touch with us, have any questions, or you want to enter the Pitch Vision competition, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampad signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.